From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Last night, or rather early this morning, the Illinois General Assembly finished its work for the spring legislative session, doing the crucial work of passing a state spending plan for the fiscal year that begins this summer. It was a dramatic finish, with the tax part of the plan barely squeaking by after some procedural shenanigans. We plan to bring you a full show on all that tomorrow, featuring interviews with the Speaker of the Illinois House and the Republican leader. I hope you can join us again at this time tomorrow. Today, we're going to focus on a shortage of pharmacists. The National Community Pharmacists Association surveyed pharmacies across the country earlier this year, and about two-thirds of respondents said they were struggling to fill jobs, particularly technicians and front-end staff. There are many cities in Illinois that have seen local pharmacies reduce their hours or even shut down entirely. But when pharmacies experience problems, it's rural communities that often feel the greatest effects. Places where the local pharmacist is the only local outpost of our healthcare system. And many of these communities have been hurting. The University of Iowa's Rural Policy Research Institute found between 2003 and 2018, the nation lost more than 1,000 independent rural pharmacies. Hundreds of communities were left without any pharmacy at all. That is, they became pharmacy deserts. The COVID pandemic complicated the picture even more. In August of last year, we talked about the trend and why it matters. We'll be revisiting that conversation for the first part of our program today. With us for that was Fred Ulrich. He's the Program Director for Research in the Department of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa and co-author of a lot of the research on pharmacy deserts and rural pharmacies with the Rural Policy Research Institute. There are several programs across the country that prepare pharmacists to do their work in rural communities. One of those is in Rockford. Dr. Heidi Olson is director of the Rural Pharmacy Education Program, or RPHARM for short, at the University of Illinois Chicago College of Pharmacy, which is located in Rockford. She's also an assistant professor and clinical pharmacist with the college. And Donna Meredith is the pharmacist and owner of Allwood Pharmacy in Alpha, a community of about 700 people that's located about a half hour south of the Quad Cities. She took over the pharmacy 6 years ago, and Elwood actually won an award last year, the Good Neighbor Pharmacy of the Year, beating more than 800 pharmacies across the country for the title. Because our program's on tape today, we are not taking calls live, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing us. The address is talk@21stshow.org. Here now is our conversation on rural pharmacies. All right, Dr. Olson, I want to begin with you. Talk a little bit more about what exactly rural pharmacies do, especially compared with, say, you know, your CVS in downtown Champaign.
So rural pharmacies often have a very close professional relationship with their patients. They know quite a bit about them. They know them typically on site and often know their medications without having to pull up a profile. Versus where you get into a large urban area and they don't necessarily recognize who you are. They probably don't recognize your name. They become part of your, you know, extended family in that small town where they know what's going on. They can help you with things. They probably even know a little bit more about your health journey than other larger communities.
Donna, I wonder if that rings familiar to you. In what ways do you experience that in your day-to-day work?
Yes, absolutely. I know my patients well. We are part of the community with them. So not only are we health care providers for them, we're oftentimes friends and have contact outside of the store as well as, you know, when I'm behind the counter. But yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. And Fred Ulrich, I want to bring you into the conversation now. So talk a little bit about the challenges that independent pharmacies face when compared with your big chains, right? Your Walmarts, your CVS, your Walgreens and Meijer and so on.
Sure. And thank you for the introduction and laying out the framework like that. We generally talk about pharmacies in three different classifications. We talk about the franchise pharmacies, like you mentioned, the CVS, the Rite Aids, or the Walgreens. But it's also important to remember that within that chain rubric. There are also things like Walmart, Publix, Hy-Vee, which is a big pharmacy service provider around this area. We talk about franchise pharmacies, which are really independent pharmacies, but they're owned, they pay a licensing fee to some other company that handles things like training and marketing and such. Independent pharmacies are those where there's only 1 to 3 pharmacies under common ownership. So it really is sort of the mom and pop model of pharmacy service. The biggest issue that truly independent pharmacies have is leveraging their ability or being able to negotiate appropriate pricing and reimbursement from both payers and pharmaceutical companies. They simply don't have the kind of weight that's necessary to be able to make an appropriate negotiation, you will, as compared to the big dogs like the CVS and the Walgreens. And as a result of that, we're seeing an awful lot of pharmacies that simply are closing up shop and saying, we can't do this anymore. There are lots and lots of reasons why pharmacies close, but most of the time that always boils down to one thing, and that's money. As long as you have people in place, and we address the workforce issues, which I'm sure you'll get to in a little bit, but if you can address the workforce issues, it all comes down to money. Nobody closes a pharmacy or any other business for that matter if they're still making money. And so if you can't make money, that's when you start saying maybe it's time to shut the door.
Donna, you have been, I mentioned you took over the pharmacy just 6 years ago, I think, but you've been in this line of work a few decades. How have you seen it change over that time?
There's in the 30 plus years that we've been pharmacists, we have owned an independent pharmacy all 30 of those years. We've recently then purchased and opened 2 additional stores. So we are one of the three store owners that you're speaking of as far as true independence. We do have participation in a kind of a buying group that does help us and aid us in contracting and purchasing at the best rate that we possibly can. So that's a benefit, and that has evolved over the 30 years. We didn't start out with that program. That certainly helped us as we've continued to grow. And then, of course, the pharmacy benefit managers have changed through the years. And again, that may be a topic that comes up later again, but we're battling with them now for just fair pricing and fair playing field, I guess, with some of these big box stores having the same opportunities that they get. So that's been part of our biggest changing, really, is that landscape of insurance and pharmacy benefit and things like that.
So Donna, maybe we can put just a sort of put some flesh on that just to make sure I understand it. When you're talking about fair pricing, so this is where, let's say you have a medicine that's medicine X, it costs $100. Walgreens comes in and says, yeah, we'll pay you $60. And the pharmaceutical company says, okay, but we want small independent pharmacies like yours to still pay the $100 sticker price. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, that can happen. Certainly, it's buying in quantity and the number of stores that they have. They get better pricing for over-the-counter items as well as prescription items. The buying group that I'm in is actually quite large, and we do very well on the pricing side of things. The unfair pricing a lot of times comes from the insurance's reimbursement to individual pharmacies. They have different rates of reimbursements for different size pharmacies or different, like between the box stores and the independents, they reimburse at different rates. So that's where we're looking really to be able to level the playing field. And I think we're moving towards that. We don't get paid as well as some of the larger stores do.
Interesting. All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show, and we are talking today about pharmacies and the shortage of pharmacists, particularly in rural areas. We're talking about this with Donna Meredith, who is a pharmacist and owner of Allwood Pharmacy in Alpha, among others. Dr. Heidi Olson, who's director of Rural Pharmacy Education Program at the University of Illinois Chicago College of Pharmacy in Rockford. And Fred Ulrich, who is Program Director for Research in the Department of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. He's also co-authored a number of research projects on pharmacy deserts and rural pharmacies with the Rural Policy Research Institute. Let's talk a little about the people side of this equation. And Dr. Olson, the R Farm program that I mentioned that you direct, it's been around since 2010. What has interest been like in the past few years?
So in the past few years, the way the environment is looking is there seem to be fewer people interested in getting into pharmacy in general. All colleges around the U.S. are working on figuring out exactly how to counteract that. So when we look at fewer people interested in going into pharmacy as a career, then that also means we're looking at fewer people that are potentially interested in rural pharmacy as well. So, you know, rural pharmacy takes a little extra skill and training to really be prepared to go in and practice there. So the numbers, generally speaking, are going down.
You know, it's interesting. I think if people don't have complex medical conditions and maybe don't have a lot of experience with pharmacies, they may have that, I think it was Jerry Seinfeld line. It's like, you take the pills from the big container and put them in the little container. What's up with that? Why is that a big deal? Talk a little bit about what goes into pharmacist training, because it's quite an extensive course of study, right?
Yes, it is typically a four-year program. Some places will do it in 3 years, and that's if you know, don't take any summers off. But our students are learning about how medications work within the body. They're also learning about how different organ systems work and how any diseases that affect those organ systems, how that impacts not only the body, but how medications would then play a role. So they're looking at things within the body, but then they're also working on learning how to communicate effectively. So whether that's to another healthcare professional like a nurse or a physician, they're also looking at how to communicate to their patients effectively, even if that's someone who's maybe 6 years old or someone who is maybe 75. So there's lots of different, what people like to call soft skills involved. You want to make sure that you're able to explain complicated medication and directions to your patients in a way that they understand.
You mentioned a decline in interest in people going into pharmacy in general. What is your best understanding of why that is? Is this another pandemic story, or is there something deeper at play?
Well, I think the pandemic made things drop very quickly in a very short period of time, but I know that that is not the main cause of it. We know the pandemic kind of put people behind on getting the courses and stuff that they needed to be able to get into pharmacy school. So that delayed people a little bit. But I think this has been a long time coming. We know that the birth rates in the U.S. have been going down. And that's been over a couple of decades. And we're also seeing fewer people going into college once they've finished high school. And in order to be a pharmacist, you do have to go to college. So before we even get into, you know, is this student interested in healthcare or pharmacy, we already have all of those numbers have decreased. So how many people are being born and then how many people are going to college after high school?
Fred, I wonder if you have a perspective, given your work, on the decline of people going into pharmacy and maybe rural pharmacy in particular.
Rural has always been a tough playground. You know, we see shortages in all sorts of healthcare workforce areas, personnel in rural areas, because unfortunately for a lot of people, it's not a very attractive place to live. It's not a very attractive place to work. We don't have amenities in rural Iowa, rural Illinois. We don't have a lot of operas. We don't have necessarily a lot of movie theaters to pick from. So it can be a tough draw for people to practice in rural areas. On top of that, you're much more likely, especially if you're in an independent practice, to be in more of a one-on-one type situation where I don't necessarily have a lot of backup. If I'm practicing in a Walmart or a CVS or somewhere like that, I'm more than likely there's a staff of pharmacists on board. And so if I'm sick or not feeling well or having a tough day, I can get other staff to cover for me. If I'm in Donna's position, I don't know. I'm assuming she has backups, but if she calls in sick, then that probably puts a big crimp on people. So that makes it less attractive to practice in a place like that.
Yeah, Donna, do you want to respond just super briefly? We need to take a break in about 30 seconds.
Yeah, sure. I certainly do have backups, but not at immediate disposal. So it's difficult for me to wake up in the morning and be able to find a pharmacist last minute to fill in for me. So that is absolutely true. I have worked many days where I don't feel up to par.
Yeah. Let me reintroduce our conversation. We're talking about the struggle to keep rural pharmacies staffed. It goes hand in hand with a decline in people's interest in going into the field. There are places in Illinois now considered pharmacy deserts because local businesses have closed up shop. We first broadcast this conversation in August of last year and talked about this with Donna Meredith, pharmacist and owner of Allwood Pharmacy in Alpha, Illinois. Also, Dr. Heidi Olson, director of the Rural Pharmacy Education Program at the University of Illinois Chicago College of Pharmacy, which is located in Rockford. And Fred Ulrich is the program director for research in the Department of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. We'll continue this conversation after the break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking today about pharmacies and pharmacy deserts. A lot of small towns in Illinois have seen their pharmacies close up. This was often the only point of contact with the healthcare system in a small town. And now even that is going away in many places. We talked about this with Donna Meredith, pharmacist and owner of Allwood Pharmacy in Alpha, Illinois, which is the winner of the Good Neighbor Pharmacy of the Year Award last year. We'll get into that in a little bit. Also, Dr. Heidi Olson, director of the Rural Pharmacy Education Program, RFARM for short, at the University of Illinois Chicago College of Pharmacy, which is located in Rockford. And Fred Ulrich, program director for research in the Department of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa, also with the Rural Policy Research Institute, where he co-authored a lot of the research on pharmacy deserts and rural pharmacies. We first broadcast this conversation last August, so we're not taking calls today, but let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Fred, I mentioned some of those numbers in the initial setup to our conversation. Between 2003, 2018, more than 1,000 independent rural pharmacies closed. How has Illinois in particular been affected by that?
Illinois isn't immune from that. There have been a number of pharmacy closures. And unfortunately, I can't find my numbers on that right now, but there have been a number. And there are pharmacy deserts in virtually every state in the United States. It's important when you use a term like desert, though, that you understand what the limitations are on that. This is basically a geography question. There are pharmacy deserts in Chicago, for example, depending on how you define that term, because it can be difficult in spite of the fact that there may be a pharmacy within a mile or two of my house. Because of mobility issues, I may not be able to get there. And so there are lots of urban places or metropolitan places that also have pharmacy deserts. The bigger issue is, again, in rural areas where it's a long way away, and even limited mobility issues can cause a significant barrier, or provide a significant barrier to obtaining pharmacy services.
And yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, pharmacies are often the only sort of, I guess the term we settled on was outpost, right, of the healthcare system in a town.
Right. And we talk about pharmacies being the first line of defense and infrequently the last line of defense in health, especially for disadvantaged populations. If you think about it, I feel ill today. I'm living in poverty. I don't have a lot of resources. I'm not feeling particularly well today. I'm not going to go try and set up an appointment at my physician because maybe I don't have insurance or I don't have money to see them. I'm not going to go to an urgent care clinic for the same thing. But I am going to go to my pharmacist and I'm going to say, hey, you know what? I feel bad today. I've got the sniffles. I got this thing going on. And the pharmacist, within the scope of their practice, within the scope of their license, can give me some sort of health advice about, well, you might try this over-the-counter thing. So they're the first line of defense in a lot of cases. They're also the last line of defense in many cases, because quite frequently that the place hangs around after the local physician says, yeah, we can't do this anymore, we're leaving. So there are lots of places where the pharmacy is the last healthcare provider in town. And even if it's not the last one in town, pharmacies tend to keep later hours than physicians do. So if it's after hours, I'm much more likely to find a pharmacist than I am a physician. So again, they cover me at both ends of the deal. And finally, on top of that, most people, and I'm sure that includes everybody on the call today, they see their local pharmacist much more frequently than they see their primary care provider. So again, there's that sort of relationship that that Dr. Olson mentioned.
Donna, your pharmacy won that Good Neighbor Pharmacy of the Year Award. Congratulations on that, first of all.
Thank you.
What does that mean?
Well, it was quite an honor, actually. Our wholesaler, AmerisourceBergen Corporation, hosts an annual trade show. And at that trade show, they honor three pharmacies that have qualified out of the 5,000 plus stores of that are Good Neighbor pharmacies across the country. And it's a voting process from the community. And we were fortunate enough to bring home the number one spot this year. And I think it's the first in Illinois, which is kind of exciting for me as well. It was a big honor.
What does it mean? What value do you feel like your pharmacy provides that, a chain might not, a big chain?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It was a community award. It was very important to my entire clientele that we won this award. It wasn't just me or my staff. It was everyone. They take a lot of pride in having me there present in their local community. They come to me for the things that have already been discussed. They talk to me first line and last line. And I cover about a 15-mile radius where I have no other pharmacies close to me. That relieves the hardship for many people who are unable to travel. And they do come to me first. And so lots of times I have to refer them on, but there are many things that I can do. We offer point-of-care testing right in the pharmacy, especially during the COVID times. We were vital during COVID. I offer vaccinations, blood pressure checks. I do a lot of blood pressure checks for patients instead of sending them to the office or to an acute care. So we provide a service that's really needed, and they appreciate it. They're very grateful people.
You know, Dr. Olson, I want to ask you, we did have a caller from Damon in Charleston, Illinois, couldn't stay on the line or didn't want to stay on the line, but did want to ask about the role of pharmacists in finding interactions between medications prescribed by different doctors, how that fits into the work they do. And I might even build on that question a little bit to say, I've heard a lot of, nowadays people are price shopping. Maybe they get one medicine from one pharmacy, another from a different one. Maybe there's a mail order pharmacy involved. And what do you lose in that context, specifically with looking for those interactions?
Yeah, so looking for interactions between not only medications, but between a medication and a medical condition is also something that pharmacists do. So that's a standard part of what we do every time we review an order for a prescription. And if you're picking up medications from, say, three different pharmacies because of the price differences, which is, a reasonable thing to do if money is important and that's the only way you can afford your medications, you're losing on the pharmacist being able to look at all of the medications you're taking at the same time. Because pharmacies across the country don't use the same system, that means each of the pharmacies that you're picking medications up from will only have access to the medications that you fill from them. So if you're getting something from a mail order pharmacy and then you're picking up maybe five other medications from your local independent pharmacy, neither one of those pharmacies are going to have the other pharmacy's medications in your list of medications to check for drug interactions. And that is a standard thing that we do. So when those medications are missing, we have no way of knowing about it. So unless the patient says when they come to pick up a medication or drop off a new prescription, oh, by the way, I'm taking this other medication that I get from a different pharmacy, those other medications are going to be excluded from the review that we do of what interacts with what.
Fred Ulrich, I want to ask you about this because this is part of a broader trend in healthcare in general, right? Telemedicine, telepharmacies, mail order medications. Has that been, fatal would maybe be overstating it, but a blow to local pharmacies?
That's really hard to say. I mean, clearly it's another vector of competition for the local pharmacy. But we don't have really good data on exactly what the level of penetration is for mail order pharmacy. And so those are actually two different things. We talk about mail order pharmacy, so that's where I can go online and I can say, here's my standard medication that I need for my blood pressure medication. And I can order that online, obviously with a prescription. But that's different than telepharmacy. And telepharmacy has a number of different parameters around it. In general, the model that we've been looking at around Iowa is where there is effectively a retail front that does not have a pharmacist, but has maybe a pharmacy tech, where a person can present a prescription, the pharmacy tech will take the prescription, will scan it, send it off to a centralized pharmacy, somewhere else, distant, so to speak. And then a licensed pharmacist, registered pharmacist will actually do the medication review. And in some cases, we'll then actually ask the person presenting the prescription to step into a booth for the sort of consultations that Dr. Olson was talking about of what else are you taking? These are the other things that we see. You shouldn't take this with food and so on and so forth. Again, as far as the level of competition, it's not entirely clear. Where we're seeing telepharmacy is where pharmacies are vanishing. So this may very well be the only retail outlet. And in terms of what impact mail order pharmacies having, I couldn't say, and I would bow to Donna and Dr. Olson's expertise on that.
Donna, how about that? Have you seen mail order cutting into your business or affecting your business in some way?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I would say significantly, especially with some of the payers that are quite popular in the Quad City area, forcing their patients to use the mail order pharmacy that the insurance company actually owns. And I will refer back to some of my original comments that the legislation is in the works for leveling that playing field as well and allowing patient choice in regards to where they get their prescriptions filled. And I don't know if you'll come back to this or not, but I own a telepharmacy actually, so I could provide a little bit of insight in that area as well, if you're interested in that.
Yeah, no, let's talk briefly about that. We don't have too much time left in our conversation, so go ahead.
So one of my three stores is a telepharmacy, and that's just opened 2 years ago. It's about 20 miles from what I would call our base store, which is my Alwood pharmacy. And then, so there I'm based, you know, daily at my Alwood store, and I do check prescriptions from both locations. And it's been really good for the community where the telepharmacy is located. They really don't notice much difference in the stores at all. When they walk in, it resembles a full pharmacy, and we still provide full service pharmacy. I come over here once a week probably to the telepharmacy and still provide vaccination services and all sorts of those benefits. So yeah, it's been a great thing for me and for the community.
Interesting. Dr. Olson, as we are coming to the end of our time together, do you, and I don't know if this is beyond your area of expertise, but we've talked about the shortage of pharmacists. Most pharmacies that I've been in, at least, run on more than just fully accredited, trained, educated pharmacists, right? There are technicians, other frontline personnel. Does the shortage in the industry extend beyond just pharmacists? We've seen with so many industries since the pandemic.
I believe there are still shortages in healthcare professions, probably across the continuum. So I know that nursing shortages are still existing, and I know that primary care physicians, so family medicine, are also shortages, which is another reason why we're looking at our rural communities and their health. They've been hit particularly hard because it's when there's a shortage of people who are out there to work. And like Fred said, attracting someone to come and work in a rural community isn't always an easy thing to do. So that any shortage of healthcare professionals we're having, it's hitting rural communities particularly hard for that reason.
Dr. Olson, I guess as we are coming to the end of our time together, what do you think it's going to take to get more people interested in staying in this line of work, medium term, long term?
I think we really have to start looking at bulking up the pathway to get into pharmacy. So we have to let people know at a younger age that pharmacy is a career option that is attainable. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to be a pharmacist. I think some people that are aware of pharmacy as a career, they
how about an organic chemist? Do you have to be an organic chemist?
You do not have to be an organic chemist. So I think a lot of people put it on this very, very high pedestal and make it seem almost unattainable. I grew up in a rural area. It is absolutely something that you can do. Yes, you do have to take chemistry and you do have to do a physics class, but those are things where you take once in undergrad. And then when you get into pharmacy school, you only use very small portions of it. You know, so all of the other skills that you have get used much more frequently than, you know, the chemistry and the very minute portion of physics that comes into pharmacy. So developing that pathway and letting people know, you know, when they're teenagers or even when they're 8 or 9, that pharmacist is an option. And who better to take care of a rural community than someone who understands that rural community and grew up in a rural community? So to me, developing awareness that it's a career option, that it's an attainable career option, and then letting people from rural communities know that there are rural programs out there in pharmacy that they can attend that will give them a special set of skills to be able to provide care in a rural community.
Donna, maybe the last word we'll have time for in our conversation. How do you make sure pharmacies like yours are able to keep going, not just now, but into the next generation of ownership, perhaps?
That's a great question. I think she's right. I think we need to just provide awareness within our communities. Even myself as a local pharmacist in my schools, career days, we go out and we visit with kids and have opportunity to go over that. We do some job shadowing. We just want to get them excited about pharmacy and being able to take care of people on this level. And I do think we provide a great service for our small towns.
Fred Ulrich, last word to you, maybe less than a minute now. Where do you think this ends? Do you expect this trend of rural pharmacies closing to continue?
I expect it will probably continue. We saw a really sharp decline around 2006, 2008, shortly after the advent of Medicare Part D. That decline attenuated shortly thereafter, but it continues. Even today, we're seeing declines in independent rural pharmacies. So I don't look for that to tail off anytime soon. There's been a lot of interest in legislation that has gone down in the last year, directly related to PBMs and reimbursement for pharmacies. I suspect that will help a lot.
All right, Fred Ulrich, Dr. Heidi Olson, and Donna Meredith, thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you very much.
And that was our conversation, first broadcast in August of last year, on rural pharmacies. Our guests were Fred Ulrich, Program Director for Research in the Department of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa, Donna Meredith, pharmacist and owner of Allwood Pharmacy and Alpha, which won the Good Neighbor Pharmacy of the Year Award last year, and Dr. Heidi Olson, Director of the Rural Pharmacy Education Program at the University of Illinois Chicago College of Pharmacy, which is located in Rockford. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.